Hello, I'm Linor Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. On the program today, we will look at zoonotic diseases. The World Health Organization has declared the worldwide outbreak of monkeypox a public health emergency of international concern. The WHO's highest level of alert aims to raise awareness on the need for a global response and funding. So far, more than 16,000 cases of monkeypox have been reported this year in over 75 countries. Meanwhile, West Africa has experienced its second outbreak of Marburg virus disease, as Ghana has its first encounter with the deadly virus. The WHO says Marburg can be transmitted from animals to humans in circumstances such as hunting and eating of bushmeat. Marburg and monkeypox are both zoonotic diseases, also known as zoonoses. These are diseases caused by germs that spread between animals and people. Ghanaian health authorities say they have ramped up surveillance and other measures to prevent the outbreak of Marburg virus disease from spreading. Here is more.
Ghana has reported cases of Marburg virus in the southern Ashanti region. This is the first outbreak of the disease in the country and the second time in West Africa. The U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention says Marburg virus is a highly infectious zoonotic disease in the same family as a virus that causes Ebola. It affects multiple organs in the body and can lead to hemorrhage or bleeding.
Marburg is relatively rare compared to Ebola. They have the same symptoms of fever, body aches, bleeding from all orifices, and mortality in Marburg seems to be much higher than Ebola. It can go as much as 90%. Whereas Ebola is about up to 50%.
Marburg virus disease can spread to humans from fruit bats. It is transmitted among people through direct contact with the blood, secretions, or other bodily fluids of infected people, and via contaminated surfaces and materials such as clothing. The World Health Organization reports that Marburg can be fatal by 50% on average. However, the rates of fatality have varied between 24% to 88% in past outbreaks. Ghana health authorities say they have implemented measures to prevent the virus from spreading, including contact tracing and strict infection control measures.
The key agencies are in terms of providing PPEs for health workers and other workers in the locality to be sure that should they have any case that they are able to have protection to manage. We are also alerting health workers to be on lookout. We have what we call primary prevention to ensure that they are not exposed unduly if there are other cases come. And most importantly, sensitizing their community and people on the presentation of Marburg so that they can quickly identify the report and also avoid contact with such people.
The WHO says previous outbreaks and sporadic cases of Marburg virus disease in Africa have been reported in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, Kenya, South Africa, and Uganda. Angola experienced the deadliest outbreak when more than 200 people lost their lives in 2005. There is no treatment or vaccine for Marburg virus disease at the moment.
A report by the World Health Organization concludes that Africa has seen a 63% increase in the number of zoonotic outbreaks over the past 10 years. For more on Marburg and the emergence of zoonotic diseases, we spoke with Professor Jimmy Whitworth, Professor of International Public Health at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. Professor Jimmy Whitworth, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
West Africa is experiencing its second outbreak of Marburg disease, although the disease has been on the continent for many years. What is your reaction to what Ghana is seeing right now in terms of the outbreak? How concerned should we be?
I think it's quite concerning to have this second outbreak of Marburg occurring in West Africa. Because what this shows us is that this disease has extended its geographical range. I mean, it's normally been seen in central, southern, eastern Africa, but not in West Africa before. This is just the second time that it's been seen in West Africa. And so this adds to the burden of diseases to have to think about in that region.
Does it mean that there is a strategy that has to be adjusted?
I think we're struggling to understand exactly what's been going on here. The two first cases were both farmers, but they didn't appear to have any epidemiological link. It's not clear if they're related in any way, whether they went to the same places or not. So we are not clear at the moment where they acquired the Marburg infection from. And of course, that's worrying, because if those two did, and that is still a source, wherever it is, then other people might get it as well. So it is important for us to try to understand where exactly this is coming from. Now, the third case, as I understand it, was a household member of one of the other cases. So we'll have caught it from close contact with one of those others. This was somebody who was in quarantine and then developed symptoms. In Ghana, I think the public health authorities are actually doing a good job. They have identified the two cases that are there. They have notified the right authorities about this. They're searching for other cases. They've identified the contacts and they've had them in isolation. Surrounding countries are also on high alert in case cases might come in there. But at the moment, this does seem to be contained. And that is due to the prompt action of the public health authorities in Ghana and in Ashanti region.
There are different outbreaks that are ongoing right now in the world, and this leads me to the monkeypox outbreak. What do you make of this? How much of a concern is it?
The current monkeypox outbreak is unprecedented. Monkeypox is a disease which its natural home is in Western and Central Africa, where it's in a reservoir in small rodents and squirrels and the like, and people just occasionally get infected when they come into contact with that. Very occasionally, we see cases occurring outside of Africa. And in most of those cases, it's somebody who has traveled while they've been incubating the infection from Africa, and then they manifest with symptoms when they get to the US or Europe or wherever it is that they're going. Those cases are usually quickly identified. It rarely spreads to anybody else. Just occasionally it goes to one or two other people. And that's what we've usually seen with outbreaks when they've occurred. But this one has really spread, and really spread fast, with thousands of cases occurring in more than 70 countries now around the world. Now, the most likely thing here is that it came from somebody, again, who was incubating the infection from Africa, but it got into a close-knit network and was able to spread very rapidly in that setting.
We are seeing a trend of this outbreak in a specific group so far, at least the majority of cases, men who have sex with men. Can you elaborate on that, and to what extent other groups should be concerned?
Right. Well, as far as we know, anybody who is exposed to monkeypox by close contact can catch it. So we're all potentially at risk. Now, it seems that with the current outbreak, that it got into this close network of men who have sex with men, and it has spread. It's spread internationally, and people have passed it on within their communities where they have moved back to. So they've seeded, if you like, new outbreaks in other parts of the world. Now, it's spread by close contact, And of course, sexual relations is an extremely good way to have close skin-to-skin contact. And that, we think, is how it is spreading in these cases. Now, 95-99% of cases have been in men in the current outbreak, and 99% of those have been self-identifying as men who have sex with men. But we have seen some women who have been infected, and we have seen some children who have been infected. Small numbers, but it shows you that anybody is at risk if they come into close contact.
Professor Whitworth, one of the things that Marburg and monkeypox have in common is the fact that they are zoonotic diseases that originate from animal. Help us understand zoonotic diseases that seem to be difficult to contain and also very dangerous, actually.
Yeah, I mean, zoonotic diseases are really important. And it sort of brings home that we as humans, we are mammals and we are part of the natural world and we engage with the natural world. If we look at all the viruses that exist and can infect humans, about two-thirds of those we share with animals. There's only about one-third which are exclusive to humans. So we share a lot of infections with other animals. Now, we don't necessarily come into contact with animals very often. We're more likely to come into contact with other humans. But there are certainly circumstances where we do come into contact with other animals. For example, many people will come into contact with pets, people who are farmers and the like will come into contact with livestock. In many parts of the world, people are encroaching upon forested areas, perhaps for agriculture or to look for food in the forest in some way, and they come into contact with wildlife. And those are the kinds of ways in which we share diseases with other animals. You've mentioned Marburg, you've mentioned monkeypox, there are plenty of others, Ebola or Lassa fever, or things like West Nile or Lyme disease in the US are all conditions which are zoonoses, which means diseases that we share with animals.
Are there some species that are more prone to being a source of zoonoses? We hear a lot about bats. We also hear about monkeys.
Well, I think it is bats, as you mentioned, that are the main carriers of zoonoses that we fear. That there are many species of bat, and there are many infections which are harbored in bats, and very often they are able to live reasonably healthy lives with these infections. But if we come into contact with them, then we become very seriously sick. So of all the mammal families that there are, then bats are the ones that really harbour the most serious zoonoses.
What if anything can be done to better protect humans from zoonotic diseases?
It's very challenging to do this. Humans normally are not infected with diseases like Ebola. Bat populations are sometimes infected with Ebola, and it carries on there. But it's extremely difficult to devise ways in which you could eliminate Ebola virus from bat populations. And for very good ecological reasons, we would not want to get rid of all the bats. We would not want to get rid of all the forests where they are. So that is a real challenge. Now, it's also difficult to stop or discourage people from going into forests. Many people will have their livelihoods there, but there are things that you can do, and they're things like not eating bats, not eating undercooked or uncooked meat and bush meat and the like. And also, it's clear there's something that they call in Sierra Leone bat malt, which is fruit which has been partly eaten by bats. Don't eat fruit which has been partly eaten by bats, because there's a chance that if you do, you might get infected in that way. So it's treat wildlife with respect. It would be one message for trying to reduce this. But beyond that, it is having good public health surveillance systems in place, so that when there are clusters of serious worrying diseases that are happening, these are rapidly reported to the authorities so that we can get a diagnosis, and so we can then work out a plan for how to deal with it. The sooner we can act when a cluster of disease is occurring, then the easier it is to control it.
And finally, we are seeing more and more emergence and reemergence of zoonotic diseases. What does it mean for the future of public health?
I think one of the reasons why we're seeing this increase in zoonotic diseases is encroachment into areas where wildlife live, whether that's people logging or going into forests to catch animals, hunting, or cutting down trees so that they can farm in those areas. That all brings people into increased contact with wildlife. And that's why we're seeing an increase in these infections. I think one thing that is happening with these repeated outbreaks that we're seeing that are coming from animals, so zoonotic infections that we're seeing here, is the need for us to realize the importance of what's called One Health. And that is where we think not just about human health, but we talk about the health of us and other animals at the same time, and realize our place in the natural world, and appreciate that the public health measures that we take to protect the human population must take account of the natural world as well. And if there's one lesson that we take from all these outbreaks that's happening, it is the importance of One Health.
That was Professor Jimmy Whitworth, Professor of International Public Health at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. WHO says zoonotic diseases, including monkeypox and Marburg, can be transmitted from animals to humans in circumstances such as hunting and eating bushmeat. What are your thoughts, and what can be done to address the issue when bushmeat consumption is cultural? Here are some reactions on Facebook. Mamadou Falilou Sek writes, food consumption habits are very diverse in Africa, and this could explain the recurrence of certain epidemics in certain regions and not in others. In Senegal, for example, the consumption of bushmeat is very rare in urban areas, and epidemics such as Ebola and COVID-19 have heightened people's mistrust of bushmeat. Hakibu Demanjega says, this will not deter us from eating our bushmeat. In other zoonotic disease flare-up, Tanzania continues to monitor an outbreak of leptospirosis or rat fever, a bacterial infection that experts say spread by rodents. The disease has affected more than 20 people recently in the southern Lindi region, with at least 3 deaths. Dr. Elisha Osati is an internal medicine physician at Muhimbili National Hospital in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. He tells us more about leptospirosis.
After the outbreak, then the Minister of Health has sent a team to the area, the site. And during that time, they found about 20 people have been infected by the disease, and about 3 have died, and others were admitted in the hospital, and the disease was not known. So it was presenting with with the severe headache and fever, and some of them were bleeding from the nose, and some also had like convulsions. So right away, the government sent the team, and actually the team took the samples of people who were there, blood samples. And also the team of WHO and CDC also came in, and actually it was found to be leptospirosis. It is different from Marburg or Ebola. We call them hemorrhagic viral diseases, because this is the bacterial one and those are the viral disease. When the leptospira enters into your body, it can go to the lungs. Actually, in the lungs, it can cause bleeding from the lungs, but it also infect the liver. So the patient can also present we call it jaundice. But also it can go to the kidneys. Again, it can go to the brain and can cause meningitis. It is more similar with dengue fever. Before the team went there, about 20 people were found to be infected, and three of them died. So currently, the remaining patients have been cured and allowed to go home, except two, whom were still in the hospital, but they are doing fine. So, you know, after we realized that it is leptospirosis, and then started treatment immediately, because only just antibiotics can cure the disease. So the situation is not bad. It has been contained, and the surveillance is also continuing around the area.
Experts say many different types of bacteria can grow on animal and seafood products. Therefore, it's important to safely handle them and cook them at the right temperature. Michelle Mullen-Kazandian is a chef in Syracuse, New York. He shares some tips.
First thing you want to do to see if your meat is any good is use your eyes and just check to make sure it's the right color. The chicken should be a nice pink off-white color like this. It shouldn't be green or any other color, really. Red meat, like beef, should be a nice deep red color. Again, no discoloration. If there is any discoloration, like gray, then that's when you want to give it a smell and make sure it doesn't have any strong odors. Same with the lamb. It should be a deeper red with no discoloration, with no strong odors. The fish should be the same. For salmon, you're looking for a pink, orange color, no green or gray. And it shouldn't have any strong fish smell. It should have like more of an ocean smell. The chicken, we're going to pan sear. I like to go kind of heavy on the za'atar spice. The safe cooking temperature to make sure there's no E. coli or food poisoning. For chicken, it needs to be 165 Fahrenheit. For beef is 145. Same with the lamb chop. For fish, 145. To get rid of bacteria like E. coli or salmonella, when taking the temperature for your various meats that you're cooking, you always want to get into the center of the thickest part.
You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It's time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and our panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including the U.S. killing of al-Qaeda leader Ayman al-Zawahiri in Kabul, and a drone strike is seen as a political win for President Joe Biden as we approach the grim anniversary of the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Afghanistan. Join us for Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Welcome back to Health Chat. Cases of COVID-19 are increasing again globally, due in large part to the rise of virus variant Omicron BA5. Experts warn that the new subvariant appears to be much more contagious than previous ones and can evade existing immunity in many people. Omicron BA5 is driving a surge in cases in several countries, including across Europe and Australia, and has become the dominant variant in the U.S. Meanwhile, an updated COVID-19 shot could be available soon, according to scientists. The Omicron-specific booster shots could be ready as early as September. Here are some steps experts say you can take to live with COVID. Get vaccinated and stay up to date with your booster shots. Know your COVID-19 community level, whether low, medium, or high, and take precautions to protect yourself accordingly. Wear a mask indoor and outdoor. Keep rapid tests on hand if possible and use them to know your status. If you are traveling, find out how to get treatment in case of infection. Now, regional authorities, medical professionals, and residents of Ethiopia's Afar region say they are in dire need of medical aid in hundreds of hospitals and health centers destroyed by conflict. The WHO says it is struggling to fulfill the country's needs as crises around the world intensify. Henry Wilkins reports from Berale, Ethiopia.
Mariam Abdallah Ali lost her daughter in May after the toddler swallowed an object found on the floor.
When we went to the local health center, they told us they could not perform an operation on her because they didn't have the right equipment. They said we had to go to the city of Samara for the operation, but my daughter died on the way.
Ali lives in the town of Bahale in Ethiopia's Afar region, where Tigrayan forces, who occupied the region until April, destroyed healthcare facilities before they left. The regional government says 60 health centres were put out of commission by the occupying forces, although Tigrayan forces and the Tigray regional leadership deny allegations. A doctor at the centre where Ali took her daughter said they no longer had the equipment to save her.
This health centre was one of those where medical devices were available. In the past, we used to perform operations because all the equipment and the medications we needed were here. But the TPLF destroyed this health centre completely.
The Tigray People's Liberation Front, or the TPLF, did not respond to VOA's request for comment on the damage in the region. In nearby Kanaba district, a health centre was ransacked and severely damaged.
The medical laboratories have been completely destroyed, and we cannot carry out health checks because we do not have medical equipment, even treatments for AIDS and diabetes. There is a big shortage of medications. Also, the lack of electricity has a negative impact.
A similar story at this hospital, funded by a German non-profit. While the need for food aid in Ethiopia has been dominating the headlines, officials say there is a great need for medical services too. The UN's World Health Organization says that just 22% of healthcare facilities are fully functioning in Afar and the neighboring Amhara region, compared to the period before the conflict began in late 2020. It's not clear how many medical facilities remain in each region. The World Health Organization says there is a life-threatening shortage of medical services in Afar towns, once occupied by Tigrayan forces. The WHO told VOA medical aid and food aid must be combined to be effective in Ethiopia.
Whether it's in terms of essential supplies, whether in terms of monitoring for infectious diseases, whether it is in terms of immunization services or services for mothers and children. It's really important for these services to be provided at the same time as food.
For Ali, aid came too late to save her daughter, but for others, there may still be time. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Bahale, Ethiopia.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For the latest news and coverage on the coronavirus pandemic, visit voanews.com. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lino Khumudu, in Washington, with producer Dan Brown. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Lenore Moudou. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the coronavirus pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and noses when we are in crowded areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.